Was a guy Caballero. I had not thought about that until just now.
All right. Are you ready to start? Because I'm ready to start.
Sorry, but I've heard some of that promo. Absolutely.
All right. We're starting because I'm leaving the provolone line. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Hey Kids Comics. I'm your host, Andrew Farmer. With me, as always, is the Jedi Cole Houston. Tonight,
also known as Il Provolone.
Il Provolone. That's his mafia name.
That's right. It's because of my insanely pale skin. I look at him, but John, he looks like he's the Provolone.
Oh, and we went straight,
gonna get some sun.
And we went straight to misrepresenting nationality immediately. We didn't even get the introduction done.
The nationalization of comic characters. Here I am doing the worst possible. Not since Watto have Falcons.
Not since Watto. Should be shirts that say "Not since Watto." Oh God, what are we talking? Since we're talking about Il Provolone,
also known as Watto Lee, was it? Watto was rather accurate because he was one of the Marx brothers. Watto Marx.
He was Watto Marx. He did come off as very very Marxian in his performance.
He was originally going to do a kind of a dual routine with Chico.
Is that right?
No, that's no good, Watto. No, you tell me it was so no good. That's no good. We can't do that. That's no good. No.
Jesus. Oh, ladies and gentlemen, that's been our show. remember to tip your waiters and try the veal. No. Tonight we're talking about a topic that, on the surface, seems very cut and dry, but as we were researching it further and further, digging deeper into it, completely not that. The opposite of that, because the more I read into it, first of all, there's very little research to do on this topic that you could actually do that was outside of, you know, our reptilian hive mind that we built, this weird V hive mind that Cole and I have built. But Cole, why don't you explain the topic and we'll get into it.
Yeah, I was, as I often do, thinking too much about comics one day. I can't imagine how that happened. And something occurred to me that there were certain characters, especially in some of the things I was recently rereading, Fables, catching up to the point where I was getting into borrowed collections that I didn't already own.
Right.
And otherwise I wouldn't have to borrow them. And also having recently been introduced via Andrew's gushing appraisal thereof and the loan of the, after having bought the first trade paperback of Saga.
Yeah.
Or so you say in the late 90s, Saga!
Saga. That was Saga.
But they, in both of these cases, there was a distinct character that exploded beyond, I think, even the author's intentions.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
And that got me thinking about other characters, and obviously, as the research began to come in on Andrew's part, forgetting a great many characters that would fall into this, and hence the title of this week's issue, The Breakaways.
Right.
Which was not a spinoff of Marvel's The Runaways. But it occurred to me there have been points where you have a character in a comic that, by accident or design, oftentimes completely by accident, becomes bigger than the intentions. You can often find this sort of happen in very obvious ways in some cases and less obvious ways in others. And it seems like almost something that's that a lot of publishers are trying to engineer.
It does, and that's what I kind of, that's where I wanted to step into this. There's been, I think if you're going to look at the breakaway or the breakout character, the optimal time to do that is in the Cole and Andy heyday of reading comics. Anything before that, let's say the 60s and even the early 70s, I think the industry was still trying to figure out what it was doing. They knew they had their hands on something that was profitable, but they didn't exactly know what they were doing, so they kind of doubled down and focused on the properties and the franchises that they had at their disposal. So they would you know, they had Fantastic Four, Spider-Man, the Avengers, they had Batman, they had the Justice League, they had Superman, or I guess the Justice Society, depending on when it was. You had Superman. You know, you had your big books, you focused on those, you introduced wacky villains, and a lot of times those villains would run through. You had, you know, your Lokis, your Jokers, your Doctor Dooms, and they would run through, but you weren't introducing a whole lot of outside characters in. You would cross over your major books. Spider-Man was in everything. But you wouldn't have a lot of the plot-driven character that you would introduce to push it. And we saw a lot of the breakout in those plot-driven characters. Characters you're introduced to push a story forward. Really, and I think that speaks to what you were talking about, that it serves no other purpose other than that. And then all of a sudden it's like, hey, this guy's popular. The difference between that, the period of time I'm talking about, and then today, is today, I think you're right, everything is engineered to be a breakout character, so you don't have a lot of breakout characters.
Well, yeah, we so desperately want every character to break away.
Right.
And I think there was a bit of casting about for this. It was sort of like, you know, you throw up a whole big, it was almost like panning for gold. Back in the days, and we're seeing this come back, sadly, when you would have like the big annual events that we talked about.
Oh my gosh.
When we, in our own annual, we talked about, you know, all the crossover annuals or the intro a character annuals, like Bloodlines or whatever that was with Marvel with the trading cards that escapes me, where you had the characters like Bantam. And I think the idea was, if we throw enough stuff out here that has no feet, you know, these things have zero legs under them, if we legitimize them, then maybe something will hit. But I think, by and large, the writers didn't give a damn about these characters. I mean, whoever was writing Legion at the time didn't give two shits about Rad.
Right.
And thankfully, I don't believe we've ever seen Rad again.
Right. No, I there were so many of those characters, too. And that was the big... You're right. There was a period of time, and we talked about it in our big crossover episodes when we were talking about the big events that happened, where every event revolved around introducing new characters and hoping, throw them against a wall and hoping that they would stick, like Bloodlines for sure, and Bloodlines had at least one breakaway character that came out of it, but that was one out of like 18 introduced characters.
Exactly.
I mean, literally 18 characters. One had some staying power. A good
example of this, to take it away from the Marvel and DC complaint, because, and I think complaint is quite the right word here, because, you know, it's like, okay, guys, yeah, we get it. Is Dark Horse Comics Ambitious Comics' Greatest World? Ambitious in that they sort of called themselves something far more than they could ever be. Comics' Greatest World was an attempt on Dark Horse's part to field a universe of their own that really had no connection. They weren't trying to join any of it together with anything else, by and large. Very few of the characters ever crossed over with each other. But it was literally just throw up this giant, disparate pile of things and see what sticks.
Right.
And ironically, a couple things stuck. And they weren't the ones I think that Dark Horse necessarily was backing 100%. You're talking about the point where you've got titles like Hero Zero and Vision 13.
Vision 13. I remember
Vision
13.
And here's one that you might remember. Ghost.
Oh, the two-fisted...
Yeah, the packing heat, guns a blazing spirit of. It was sort of like if the Shadow was dead.
Right? That's a good way to put that.
Heat. And another of the unusual breakaways, solely because it became something more than it was barbed wire.
Oh.
But yeah, you may not realize barbed wire actually came from the Dark Horse Comics Greatest World. Characters like X
didn't quite get there.
Motorhead just couldn't find any kind of fan base. And these are just the ones I can remember. I'm actually not even looking up Comics Greatest World. But there was so much fanfare. And in many ways, it was the forgotten engineering a breakaway. Because so much of it was, frankly, forgettable. But we remember things like Bloodlines because they hurt us more because more of us were following Marvel or following DC.
Well, another big culprit like Bloodlines, like Dark Horse, is Image.
Good point, yeah.
Image did this because Image had a death blow. Image had, because they tried to spin out a Youngblood, they tried to spin everybody out of Youngblood.
Yeah.
But one of the big breakouts.
What was the one with the super grunge punk.
Gen 13?
No, there was a... They had a character called Grunge. There's one. They were supposed to be like, you know, genetically engineered super beings from the lab, but yet they were all...
Deviate?
That may have been it. Where, you know, they were all tatted up and pierced and fresh from the Hot Topic.
Yes. Yeah, I think it was Deviate.
And it's like,
yeah.
What, do they have this shit in the lab? I mean,
well, they have a Hot Topic by the lab. It's like
the lab? Is that what we're...
It's in the food court. It's in the food court.
Oh, of course, in the food court.
No, but the one big breakout that Image had, I think, that really crossed over. I mean, you had Spawn, but Spawn doesn't count. Spawn did cross over with Batman and all of that. But the one that really stands out to me as a breakout character is Angela. Angela from the pages of Spawn. I think it was Spawn number 9.
That's a good point. Angela was a breakaway.
Well, not only did she break away, she broke away and ended up being snatched up by Marvel.
Yeah.
And is now in like Guardians of the Galaxy and Thor comics and whatnot. So she did a decent job of breaking away there. Now, you were talking about Bloodlines, and I think one of the big breakaway from Bloodlines was Hitman. If you remember,
I didn't even realize that's where Hitman.
Exactly, that's why it's so weird.
I didn't realize Bloodlines was literally Hitman Begins.
That's all it was Hitman was in one issue, and then they were like, okay, this is the guy that we're going to attach ourselves to, and actually, this is the one. And I think that maybe that's what it is, Cole. I think maybe these events are okay. Let's put this roster out there, and we'll see who, you know, we're going to crowdsource our next superhero. Let's see who likes what the most, and then we'll go from there. But in the big two, who do you see as like a breakout character? Because we were having this conversation offline about the fact that I can't really consider a lot of the let's say Robin or Bucky.
Yeah, well, you had brought up Nightwing, for example, as being one of these characters that a lot of people latch onto when you say breakaway. That's where they're headed in their mind. And can you really call the latest incarnation of Robin a breakaway?
Or can you call Dick
Grayson? Especially
when
you look at that ridiculous costume. It was like something Dead Man Rejected.
But can you call Dick Grayson in his solo book a breakaway character?
Yeah, that's true.
See, I don't think you can because they were positioned.
He's got a long history. It's just the next inevitable phase. That does not make him a breakaway. I will challenge you with a breakaway character from a very unusual, in much the same way that Angela jumped ship, becomes so wildly popular. An unusual breakaway, the sole survivor, if you will, of an entire engineered universe, much like Comics Greatest World, is Static, who had become known as Static Shock.
Oh, yes. Well done.
Milestone Comics.
Yeah.
I was blown away. Wait a minute. That's from Milestone. I mean, nary the twain shall meet, except in that crossover event with Superman, where the Milestone universe touched the Superman universe. And Milestone was like any kind of engineered world like that. The trying to create a Marvel or DC universe from the ground up when the big two were so well established was a huge order. And especially when it is decidedly ethnocentric.
Right. In many ways,
it was off-putting to people, and some of the stuff was actually very good.
Brilliant.
Icon was incredibly well written, but suffered from the fact that Duffy?
Yeah.
Would, you know, constantly fought the perception of quote-unquote Black Superman.
Right.
Until finally he just said, okay, yeah, it's Black Superman.
It's like, if that's what's going to get you off of my back, yeah, let's just
exactly.
call it Black Possibly Superman.
As much out of resignation as, an actual admission.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, some of the stuff was very well done, but it became almost, it was a flash in the pan, unfortunately, in so many ways, because it was so heavily tied. And to see a character like that, the reason that character popped in my head mere moments ago was at the time it struck me as so wonderful that something did survive.
Right.
There is a little toehold into Milestone Universe that exists to this day, and apparently even got his own cartoon series, so bravo, Static.
Well, and I think when we're talking about breakaways, I think everybody's going to latch on to, and we have a kind of a standing, I don't know whether it's an argument or it's a conversation at least about Wolverine, whether Wolverine can be considered a breakaway, and I think he can be considered a breakaway in the sense that he got so much more popular than they imagined him when they introduced him.
It is so painfully obvious that Wolverine, there was either an editorial mandate or somebody decided, it was almost the world tour Hulk where periodically, Hulk would wind up in Israel and fight Sabra or, go somewhere other than the U.S. So he gets up into the Great White North. He's visiting America's Hat, and he winds up coming afoul of the Wendigo and the Wolverine.
And it's hijinks ensue as they always do when two people meet, and then push comes to shove. Hey, well, we got this mutant already in the bag. Let's add him to this new roster of X-Men.
I don't really know what the timing was between the Hulk issue where he first appeared and the arrival of Giant Size X-Men that would launch a whole new mutant era.
Yeah,
but it was almost like you say, they're like, okay, we want Cyclops in the mix because he's
boring.
Well, yeah, he is constantly going to be upstaged,
right?
But also, you need that cornerstone.
You need a platform.
Yeah, you need the foundation, and then you can bring in characters that are brand spanking new. Their first appearance was in X-Men, Giant Size X-Men 94. And then, like you said, they're like, oh, hey, there was that Wolverine. He was a mutant, right?
Yeah, let's get him in there.
Yeah,
they didn't have to work on it. That's the thing, is like they had to invent a bunch of other mutants, essentially. This is when they didn't have to do that with.
Well, and also the elephant in the room is that, quite frankly, Giant Size X-Men was X-Men-UN.
X-Men World Tour, yes. You're absolutely right.
It was like, oh, look, let's have Storm from Africa, Banshee from Ireland, and I mean like serious Ireland.
Like,
right,
like
point,
mutton
he's got,
chops.
Like, he's got one of those stupid leprechaun pipes. Come on.
He does.
How much more Irish?
Gandolfing it up hard.
You're Irish, and you should be highly offended by his shock of red hair and his stupid leprechaun pipe. The only thing he was missing was a tiny green derby.
Right?
and a giant tankard of beer.
Well, I think that they had to reserve some of that for Black Tom Cassidy.
Oh, that's true. He had to be the player on the other side. He got the giant beer.
He got the giant beer and the shillelagh.
Bottom was in a stout and the leprechaun in his pocket.
That's But no, you're saying, right.
Between the two of you, if you combine Banshee and Black Tom Cassidy, you know what you get? The Lucky Charms leprechaun.
But I want to talk about, because Wolverine obviously broke away. Sorry, bad podcasting. I mean, he was in everything.
Essentially a throwaway character.
But he was a throwaway character, yes. He was a throwaway at the character at the beginning that they then included in X-Men. And then,
hey, let's put him in X-Men. And really, if you look at his early X-Men, he's not the cinematic Wolverine. He doesn't just chew up every scene. He's there, he serves a purpose. They start doing some fun little interactions in a way, the gruff old loner, I think within the first few issues, especially once Kitty Pryde comes on board, his heart actually did grow.
Yeah, right.
That day. But and so you see this sort of gruff old loner evolve. And I think at that point, then you're starting to get that breakaway. And then people start to realize the potential. No one has really, to my satisfaction, settled on exactly what his claws would look like in life. They've been everything from fork tines to katana to what I always envisioned them as, the way John Byrne drew them, is a symmetrical tapering
like claw. Spikes. But the one, okay, so here's the one from, at least from Marvel, for me, that is the breakaway character, right? This is it. This is, if you want an archetype for a breakaway character, it's this. And that is the Punisher. Because if you look
at a throwaway character.
If you look at Wolverine, right, you just hit the nail on the head for me, is that they engineered, at every turn, they have engineered Wolverine into something else. Okay, let's give him these claws, let's give him this, let's make him go berserk, let's give him... Now, Frank Castle has gotten a little bit of that recently, but from the early 80s on, Frank Castle is Frank Castle. He's a guy with a bunch of guns and a grudge, and that was it. So he's introduced to try to kill... He was introduced...
He has a chip on his shoulder as big as the Empire State Building.
And people might not like Wolverine's methods, bub, but he is a quote-unquote superhero. No one likes Frank Castle. Yeah. No one wants to work with Frank Castle, but he just keeps appearing. Now, granted, he was the quote-unquote anti-hero, and that was getting to be a popular thing, and I think that the Punisher had a lot to do with that. People gravitated towards that idea when they introduced him, but I think
it was also a period where, you were seeing a lot more Charles Bronson remakes of Death Wish.
Yes.
So... he fit the theme for the vigilante justice, where justice equals just simply killing people.
Exactly. But here's the thing, right? That didn't stop him. And I think that it was the idea that the character that they developed was a throwaway character. He was going to be in one issue of a comic book and that's it. But he was so visually striking that they kept him around. He kept popping up after that and other things.
There was some potential built in there. Another interesting breakaway, oddly enough, Deathstroke the Terminator.
Yes, yes.
Because he was meant to serve a purpose within the Teen Titans. And his story, his abilities, what Slade Wilson was, becomes bigger than the intended use.
Mm-hmm.
This was going to be a major player, yes, in the Teen Titans. But I don't think anyone ever thought, hey, let's groom this guy for his own title. Here's a character that needs his own title.
Well, and that's funny that you would say that about Deathstroke, because when they were developing Deadpool... And we have to talk about him. I don't want to talk about him because of what he has become. But when he was introduced in New Mutants 98, I think it was 98.
Long after I dropped New Mutants.
He wasn't the same Deadpool that we know now. he didn't have, he was, he definitely had that kind of flippant patter with Cable and with the New Mutants, but he wasn't like, oh, look over there, I'm going to eat a taco, look at the camera. Like, that wasn't the Deadpool that he was. But he was created as a, as an, by Fabian Nicieza and by Rob Liefeld as a thumb in the eye to Deathstroke the Terminator. That's why he was, that's what he was. Okay. He was going to be a throwaway character, based around, you know, and they, and it was to see if they could basically get away with making him and getting him into a comic book. Because his name is Wade Wilson, which is Slade Wilson. The outfit is very similar. He had a very similar...
It's like a two-eyed Deathstroke.
Yeah. His skill set was almost the same. This is before the healing factor and the crazy. This is just, he's an assassin. He's a paid assassin that was super agile, you know, and great with weapons. Like, he carried the swords just like he did. It was literally a character that they put in to see if they could get away with putting in a thumb in the eye to DC with Deathstroke the Terminator.
And I will point out that's a thumb in the good eye.
In the good eye, right. And so they did that. And got away with it, and then the character, and I don't know, okay, so help me here. Game this out for me.
All right.
How did we go from, like, 98 to 2004? What happened in the intermediating time, in the between times of him being introduced as a throwaway character, and then him becoming this hyper-popular character? Like, what has how did that happen? Was it an edit? Do you think it was an editorial mandate? Because when I look it up, when I try to research it, you know, what I get is, oh, well, America gravitates towards him because of this reason. But they're not getting it.
Where did that happen?
Yeah, what was the behind the scenes? Because we can't talk about him like a person. They aren't people, and it's hard for me to admit that, too.
Well, when I try to Google the origin of that shift in the character, all I get is Google Earth images of roughly where Dick Cheney's house should be.
Right.
It's all blocked out. That was weird. I had to...
It's redacted.
Yeah, I did a couple. I did Google, Yahoo, Bing.
Bing. Ask Jeeves. Did you ask Jeeves?
I even asked Jeeves, and I got the same thing.
Alta Vista. And
then a Black Ops team came by and handed me notes and said, don't, just don't.
Right.
So, and off they went in their stealth helicopter. So, we're not even going to touch that. But I think what you're looking at here is a syndrome that I wanted to talk about, and it's interesting, I never would have connected this with Deadpool, was the kind of accidental breakaway character. And that is a character that was a throwaway, literally throwaway to breakaway, is how we would define this. If this was This Is American Life, it'd be like, we're now going into chapter 4.
Act 2. Throwaway to breakaway.
This is now act 2. Throwaway to breakaway. On this comic book.
Listen, you stick with Garrison Keillor. Yeah, I got Ira Glass. All right.
You got my back. Thank you. But there were a couple of distinctive, in my own personal experience, throwaway characters that were never intended to be anything further.
Okay.
That someone then came and just, for whatever reason, they probably just went to the, you know, editor-in-chief and said, look, boss, can I have this? And they're like, yeah, I threw it in the trash. You know, it's like, you know, can I have this little fun-shaped...
Yes. No, yeah, I think you're right.
Then they go and they turn it into high art. And you're like, hey, that was mine. It's like, no, you threw it out.
Finders keepers, pal.
Yeah. And a good... The first example of this I can cite is from the pages of, I believe, Action Comics, though it could have been any of a number of 40 other Superman titles, though this actually predates the Superman title explosion.
Right.
Was a character that was an assassin.
Okay.
Who very publicly, very brutally murders a politician.
Okay.
Runs afoul of Superman. I couldn't even tell you what else happened because that's all that really stuck. And I think it was Gil Kane art, if I'm not mistaken. And it was just this character who pops in, you know, teleports in a green Union suit with big antennae, known as Ambush Bug.
Ah, yes.
Ambush Bug comes, does his business, and leaves. And is to be heard from no more. Until Keith Giffen decides, hey, you know what would be fun? Is say this character nobody cares about, nobody remembers. I can just make him into a fun little cipher, you know, just something to do jokes with about the DC universe and to be a comic foil to Superman.
Right.
Because the one thing Superman was lacking was the character from Much Ado About Nothing that Michael Keaton played in the Kenneth Branagh movie.
In the Kenneth Branagh movie.
Apparently.
That joke was for three people, by the way. Yeah.
The three people who will get that are probably rolling right now. Right. Apologies to everyone else who's scratching
no,
their head.
No, don't apologize. Step up your game, other people.
Get out there, Netflix it, find Much Ado About Nothing, and you'll see what we're talking about. But, you know, it just became this comical character where Ambush Bug is running around with Cheeks the Toy Wonder. And, you know, like switching bodies with Superman when he finds a piece of red kryptonite. He doesn't know what it is, and he wants to give it to his best pal.
Right.
And it just becomes this sort of fun little comic character. And like, wait a minute, whoa, a year ago he was killing a guy. But he was completely repurposed. Now, the other even more drastic repurposing was literally to steal a joke from a former Diamond coworker when we were doing our little self-published mini comic Blame, who did a one-page illustration for Spasm, the super-powered anabolic steroid man. It was literally like, and I think that Spasm was very much, this was during the Image era, so
right,
jumping on that. But this was a little bit around that era, maybe even the starting gun, in a spinoff from the Teen Titans, the Omega Men.
Right.
Which was an intergalactic team that ran around having adventures in the whatever the hell empire that Coriander was from, Starfire.
Right.
In and around all that area. Fighting the good fight against some evil intergalactic empire that was the enemies of the good empires. There was a group of intergalactic bounty hunters, because this is in the 80s and bounty hunting was really big between that Steve McQueen movie and Boba Fett.
And Renegade. Don't forget Lorenzo Lamas.
Oh, yeah.
In Renegade.
Renegade. There was this team of bounty hunters, one of which looked like what I used to call Space Joker.
Right.
And you know, that's for the other another three or four people who will be like kind of having a little chuckle at the fact, oh yeah, Space Joker. Called Lobo. Apparently after his one time appearance in the pages of Omega Man, he disappears into obscurity, gets bulked up on steroids and Stairmasters, and then runs havoc in the galaxy with a Space Bulldog and a Space Cycle. And
a Space Hog, yeah.
Space Hog with his Space Penguins and Dolphins and what have you.
By the way, while we're talking about Lobo, and I don't want to derail too hard, but there was a picture posted by this guy. There was a guy that posted a picture of himself as in a treatment for Lobo in the DC Cinematic Universe. And it was beautiful.
Oh,
And that man is none other than Danny Trejo. And when you put that into your head and think about it, I can't think of anyone more perfect to play Lobo than Danny Trejo.
I just had this vision of the Brady Bunch with Lobo.
Yeah, yeah.
Lobo,
and also
Snickers bar. Why?
And also, if you haven't seen the trailer for the new Machete movie, Machete in Space, where he has lightsaber machetes, man. Make him Lobo. Yes. If you're putting a Deadpool movie out, put Lobo into. Yes. You want me to be first in line to see Batman versus Superman? Give me a Lobo cameo with Danny Trejo. I will be there now.
You got time. Get Trejo in the studio. Shoot a post-credit sequence. Right.
Trejo's already in the studio. He has his mutant ability is to be in every studio at once.
That's right.
But yes, no, you're absolutely right. Okay. Lobo was a one-shot that became wildly popular.
Oh, the thing is,
in
the Snickers
popular.
Commercial, when he eats the Snickers, he turns into Space Joker.
Space Joker.
He turns back into the original Lobo. The joke is, nobody knows who the hell that's supposed to be.
But no, you're right, and he became this wildly, and still, to this day, is a, you know, had now he became Space Joker again. I don't know if you knew that.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, in the New 52, he became a more serious, like a Deathstroke mixed with Space Joker, but, you know, it's the slimmed down, Lobo.
So, yeah, isn't just like the exaggerated, just shy of prime.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Not the supreme image Lobo that was there for a long time. No, this is a slimmed down, more lithe, Lobo, but yes, he still to this day exists in the DC universe doing his thing. You're absolutely right. The huge breakout character was Lobo,
and it was again in both of these cases. These characters became Ambush Bug to a lesser degree, but during his heyday, becomes a breakaway because someone repurposed the character.
You talk about a repurposing of characters into one of my favorite characters who. Got his own kind of renaissance in the last 15 years probably, and that's none other than Mark Spector. Moon Knight on the Marvel side started as a one-off character in Werewolf by Night as a werewolf hunter.
That's right.
And then went on.
I mean, how much mileage can you get out of that outside of Werewolf by Night?
Right, and it became...
I mean, apart from maybe him inadvertently going after Man-Wolf.
Or
you didn't have a lot of opportunities.
Right, exactly. Wild Child, like, you would have to stretch, but you could maybe get five or six.
Oh, my bad, I thought you were a werewolf.
Yeah, maybe five or six characters out of it, but in the end, you took this... You took him and... It was popular in that those issues of Werewolf by Night. He got his own Marvel Spotlight issues in 70. This is back in the 70s, in 76. Kind of disappeared for a little while and then came back in the pages of the West Coast Avengers. You know, he was here and there, but then came back big in the West Coast Avengers. And from then on out, he's kind of been a Marvel staple at this point.
He's had quite a lot more mileage than I think anybody ever expected.
Well, I mean, he didn't have the crazy, he didn't have the Moon Knight copter, he didn't have, you know, any of the things that he has now. He was just a guy that fought werewolves. And now, look at you now, Mark Spector. You got another book coming out next month or the month after, another reboot. You've got you've had your own issues for the past 10 years. You done good, kid.
Yeah, and also all Werewolf by Night fans can all sort of smugly say to themselves, "I knew him when."
Mm-hmm. I want to talk about the other direction. There's still a lot of characters we could talk about, but I want to talk about there is a subcategory here that I think we need to get into, and that subcategory is. Characters that came out of another medium and broke into comic books. Broke away enough to get into comic books from another medium. And there's two that really jump out in my mind that this speaks to. And one of them is our favorite S.H.I.E.L.D. agent, Phil Coulson.
Oh.
Because Phil Coulson started in the Avengers movies. And before that, in the one-shots, and he was the guy that tied the... all of the movies together, but became so popular because of the movies that they then took him and put him into the comic books.
Yes, and that's another great example. And, of course, immediately everybody, including myself, is going to be thinking, oh, well, the precedent for this, for jumping...
Media,
is, of course, Harley Quinn.
Mm-hmm.
Wildly popular cartoon character all of a sudden insinuates herself retroactively into the comics and inspires a portion of the god-awful looking upcoming
it spun out in that Deadpool
vomitous
way.
Disaster that's going to be a Suicide Squad movie.
Well, it spun out in that Deadpool way where it was this brilliant thing that Paul Dini and Bruce Timm did in the Batman, you know.
And I think that what's funny with her is she was an engineered breakaway. She was meant to be a breakaway character in the cartoon.
Right.
But I don't think anyone ever could have engineered her. So, you know, I don't think there was remotely a notion that let's introduce this character in the cartoon so that we can popularize her into the comics. I think that the comics came out of a complaint by possibly even new readers drawn to the comics by the cartoon. Like, well, hey, where's Harley?
Well, I think you started to see a lot of...
What's going on? Where's Harley?
I don't know why Jimmy Stewart and Don Knotts want Harley.
I've always been a big fan of the animated series, so I check out the comics.
But I think what you saw was the comic, or the animated series came to a stop, but Harley didn't.
Yeah.
You started to see that the animated Harley in toy form, in statue form, in, you know, apparel, in cosplay, a lot of that. And I think a lot of what we see now in comic books is crowd-driven, it's crowdsourced, it's not, a lot of it doesn't come from the writer's room as much as it does the outside now. A ton of it still does, but...
Oh, absolutely.
But, you know, if something is popular, you got to bring it in. But you don't have to make a mockery of the idea of what it was in the first place, but that's a whole other thing. But no, yes, okay, so you were talking about Harley, but you were going somewhere else with it.
Oh, yeah, I think that, you know, it's easy to imagine that was the first instance, unless you know something of the history of Superman. And I would argue the first character, not necessarily a huge breakaway character per se, but the first character to jump medium, or jump a media,
mm-hmm.
was Perry White.
Perry White, yeah, I agree. Perry White did not exist in the comics in any kind of the form in newsstrip.
It was literally, and it was one of many things. I think the fascinating thing about the history of Superman is the character himself, because of the amazing international appeal of this character, was naturally all over the place.
Right.
Breaking into every possible medium. And in the, you know, the golden age of radio, Superman, of all things, you know, you think of the comic as being such a visual medium that, you know, lends itself beautifully to television and film, but it even lent itself to radio. But because of those constraints, more of what we know of Superman was born literally under the necessity of kind of, you know, jazzing up
right
the character for a listening audience, that Superman went from leaping tall buildings to being able to fly. The Daily Star became the Daily Planet because it's a sexier name.
Right, it's more all-encompassing. It's,
yeah, and there were so many aspects of the character that we know and love that came from radio. So it's not, in that sense, all that terribly surprising. It just, it hadn't been done in so long.
Right.
I mean, there was no way in hell that Dr. Noah Tall from the Super Friends was ever going to make it into the comics.
Right, but you know who
did? And
that's
for the one person who gets that joke.
But you know who did?
See those encyclopedias over there? I've memorized every page. I know it all. That's right. His name's Dr. Noah Tall. Silence, Twisty!
Jan and Jace did.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I did not realize that they had made the jump.
It just dawned on me, Firestar did. From Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends.
Oh, my gosh, yes, of course. Even before Harley Quinn, perhaps.
Yes, and yes. Herbie, let's not forget.
Oh, yes, in fact, John Byrne brought Herbie to the...
Yes.
The Fantastic Four, so but not because it was a popular breakaway character.
No, because he wanted to put Herbie in.
Yeah, because he wanted to pay tribute to the fact that the Human Torch was replaced by a retarded robot.
So what about...
And I know that's not politically correct, but I think everyone would agree that retarded is the word for that robot.
And the other way rings true as well. Your favorite... The Tick was never as popular in book form as he was in TV form until they moved him out there.
Yeah.
You know, the comic book was great. We both know the comic book was great, but it did not have the readership that it did. It wasn't nearly as popular. It wasn't a breakaway until after it became an animated series.
You know, Eastman and Laird could never have imagined.
Talk about a breakaway.
Yeah, when they parlayed their mutual life savings into self-publishing a comic book based on a fairly laughable concept.
A Daredevil ripoff.
Yeah. Their little black and white indie would catch someone's attention who recognized the potential that it was just a little bit of tweaking. All of the elements were already there.
Right.
And, you know, a lot of the hardcore fans accused them of being sellouts and all that. I'm like, call them sellouts when they stop publishing the regular book.
And I don't care if you call them sellouts or not. They made money.
Yeah.
Good for them.
Well, and the bottom line is, when you stake your life savings on something you're doing as a labor of love, and you imagine that's all you're ever going to get out of it, and suddenly the money truck pulls in, that's not selling out.
Right.
So, you know, absolutely more power to them. But, I mean, they continue to publish.
Right.
And they didn't try to turn Mirage Studios into some giant multinational and churn out a bunch of other crap. If they put out some other titles, and some of it was great, some of it was crap, but they didn't just try to, you know, parlay that fortune and now we're going to do this right.
Exactly. But and they're still, and to this day, the original iteration of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles is still popular. Right now there's a crossover with Batman, which is if you get a chance to get your hands on it, super cool, because it's basically Batman gets kind of thrown into the Teenage Mutant, and it's the back forth, it's the spawn.
So he probably
thing.
Got ninja bulleted.
But the cool thing is,
it's like a time bullet for ninjas.
Because the turtles are, you know, eternally teenagers, essentially. You get Batman, it falls into that Batman mentor role with, like, Michelangelo, it basically robbing the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles into being
as
better.
As long as he doesn't do it All-Star Batman style.
No, he doesn't yell, I'm goddamn Batman at him. But there's one here that shocked me, okay? And it's one of these, and it's the last, you know, unless you've got any more, we can move on after this. But it's one that actually, in my research, I found that actually threw me, because I did not know this came from a comic book. I absolutely loved this show. It came out while I was in high school and kind of right after in that period. It went a long way to informing my sense of humor and my enjoyment of adult animated. And I don't mean like, you know, Omaha the Cat Dancer adult anime. I mean like, you know,
I wish
geared towards
only have done right.
An adult audience, animated TV. And that was the Jason Alexander voiced Duckman that was on the USA Network. I don't know if you ever watched it, Cole.
I never watched it. I remember, you know, I know about it, but I guess the problem I had with Duckman is that Duckman sounded like Jason Alexander voicing Duckman.
It did.
So it was hard to get past that and the fact that I absolutely have zero feelings in a good way for that particular artist's style.
Yeah, I could see that. But the show was actually very good. It was very funny. And it came from a Dark Horse comic. And I did not know that until my research.
It's sort of like when you went to see Men in Black and it said based on a Marvel comic, and you're like, when the hell?
Right? Right. You're like, what? I was having a conversation with somebody the other day about a comic-based movie that came out. Oh, it was R.I.P.D. that they didn't know. They're like, everything just comes from a comic book now. I'm like, we've been around for a while. We are Legion. We have a lot going on.
Yeah, and I'm sure like when, Cowboys and Aliens came out, nobody knew that came from a very obscure indie.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's, I mean, I wanted to talk a little bit about that kind of breakaway, because you've got Harley Quinn, you've got your characters like that, that have spun out of other media and come into comic books, or vice versa, that got more popular because of it. I think that's a big version of the breakout, especially in the world that we live in, where everything is connected. We're not talking about just comic books anymore. We've got movies. We've got Coulson making the jump. We've got Harley making the jump. We got the back and forth.
Well, even the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yes.
Have a comic incarnation that allows them, for one thing, greater interaction with the greater Marvel Universe, but also has become, it's not a direct adaptation. It is the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. concept in the comic S.H.I.E.L.D., not the cinematic S.H.I.E.L.D.
Right.
Which is an interesting, you know, it's nice to see them sort of allowing, so in a sense, those characters have now made the crossover into their universe proper.
Well, and if you want to look at kind of a snowballing momentum breakout, a character that was let's even call it a team of characters, that was by no means not popular. They had a certain popularity. Was the Guardians of the Galaxy. Always been a fairly popular comic book. Went through a lot of iterations, a lot of team rosters and things like that. All of a sudden, you take this fairly obscure Marvel comic that we all knew but nobody else did, and we knew him from Yondu and Charlie 49 and
27.
84 Hike. Did I hear a niner? I always love making that joke about him. Martin X, you know, all of these guys, Vance Astro at some point, yeah. Star Fox. I can't remember the guy with the giant wings.
Starhawk.
Thank you. Those are the Guardians we know, and then they go through iterations over time, and then you take this team and you throw it on the big screen, and you put Chris Pratt in there, and all of a sudden, wildly popular, flip back to the comics, holy hell, like, this is now one of your flagship books that was never.
Yes, that, well, what's interesting also is, speaking of the breakaways, and the repurposing concept, and I'm surprised this didn't occur to me earlier, the contemporary roster.
Right.
Guardians. Was somebody saying, hey, can I use this character nobody's looked at in years? Can I use this character that hasn't been around in half a century and repurpose that character? And I mean by this, I believe a character that may have come from the pages of the Hulk also, if I'm not mistaken, Rocket Raccoon.
Right.
A character from, you know, back in the just publish anything you want, people will buy it, Lee Kirby era, when Stan Lee would wake up in the morning and stretch and go, Garfunkel! And he'd write it down real quick and hand it off.
Jack Kirby's just literally sitting by the bed drawing his dreams.
Yeah, he would just... It's Jack Garfoom and hang up, and you know the next day the monster's on the prowl. Garfoom. And you had the character of Groot.
Started out as a villain.
Yeah, as this intergalactic giant wood creature.
Mm-hmm.
And you had the character like the original Star-Lord, completely repurposed.
Mm-hmm.
And changed. And you know, Gamora had been around
for a little while, yeah.
You know, she dates way back to like the 70s and 80s. So you basically, it was sort of like casting about the intergalactic Marvel Universe and snatching up as many obscure characters as possible rather than just retooling Charlie 27.
Right.
Remaking Yondu and trying to, you know, sex him up and modernize him. Instead, they took characters nobody cared about,
right,
or forgotten, and well, turned them into a group that ultimately becomes a big breakaway.
I think, and this is what I'm going to call passing notes syndrome, because I think this is what happened with Deadpool, is that no one cared, and he was under the radar until he wasn't, and I think what happened was, in the writer's room, that Deadpool got passed around like a note in class. Like, one writer would be like, yeah, sure, you can use him, nobody cares. Like, and it slowly, and it slowly built a mythology where you kept stacking these weird things on top of each other because nobody cared about the character. Let's make him crazy. Let's make him super regenerative, but make him ugly. Let's make him, you know, let's make him break the fourth wall. We need that in this issue. And it just sort of built and on itself and snowballed into this giant, you know, monstrosity that we have now because it flew under the radar for so long, and there were two ways to go about handling it. Either the you know, the editorial mandate was to kill it because it had gotten out of hand, or go with it because it had gotten kind of popular and let it continue. And I think that's what they decided, and I think it worked in their favor.
Absolutely. There's a couple other characters I just want to touch on briefly. One, I don't know whether or not to define her necessarily as a breakaway, because I can't say with any certainty that, you know, she ever had a popularity explosion, per se. Mm-hmm. But she certainly went from being kind of this sort of minor supporting character that helped build another character to playing a very prominent role in the sort of reimagining the return of the Justice League International, and that is Sue Dibney.
Oh.
And when the Justice League International is, you know, coming back and they're recapturing some of that old Giffen, you know, tongue-in-cheek stuff, and it was a fun read, and I absolutely fell in love with Sue Dibney. And I think that in many ways that may have been deliberate. Because somebody somewhere knew where this was headed. And I think this was, in addition to bringing back something that people enjoyed and was going to have that nostalgic draw, and it, you know, unbeknownst to us, they knew where this was headed, and they wanted you to fall in love with Sue. And I absolutely did, more so than in any of the other few times I'd ever encountered her working with old Twitchy Nose. And then to move into Identity Crisis, it was crushing. And I think it couldn't have been as crushing if you weren't familiar, if you had not had that opportunity to fall in love with her. So I think for a lot of people, her death was tragic, but it was not as serious a blow as it was. Because I was thinking, oh my God, this is a brilliant character. Where I'm going to love seeing where, oh, they're not going to do anything else with her.
And that's that. Here's my question now as we're wrapping this up. And there's so many more breakout characters that we haven't talked about. That's the way it always is.
And please write to us at jcumail@yahoo.com and let us know if we missed any of your favorites.
Well, Constantine.
Oh, gosh. And that was in our notes. Yes.
Constantine has to be mentioned.
John Constantine appears, apparently first appearance briefly in Crisis on Infinite Earths, solely to give a direct hook into that series.
Yes.
But also, you know, appears in the pages of Swamp Thing as a guide through what was going to, literally, like the crisis in the mystical realm. And to help carry the story of the evolution of Swamp Thing.
And he was an Alan Moore plot device.
Oh, yeah. Very crucial, but he was never meant to be anything other than Alan Moore's pet plot device.
And that's exactly what he was, because if you've heard us talk about, and especially in our giant Alan Moore mega special 5-issue deep delve, we talked about how he says that he created the character. So this is somebody that was literally a character that he was like, oh, well, I'm going to make this guy because, you know, like, and that was it. And look at, jeez, you want to talk about?
Yeah, I think that it was arrived about the time that Swamp Thing was transitioning into becoming the preemptive Vertigo title.
Mm-hmm.
And was a perfect fit for the Vertigo series. I think someone recognized on an editorial level that, you know, this is a character that has tremendous potential to take us somewhere in the mystical realms of the DC universe that we've never gone before, you know, Doctor Fates and Enchantresses and other mystical characters, Dr. Occult,
right.
Have never taken us to humanized
street level. Yeah.
The mystical realms. And as we're running low on time, I want to talk about the characters that inspired this.
Okay.
That this particular issue. And I had cited both Saga and Fables, which I'm getting now into trade paperbacks that I have never read because I didn't have them before. And I'm getting into the meat of some of these stories. But in Fables, which is what I was talking about when I said they never read before, there was a character that just becomes more and more wonderful. One of the things Bill Willingham does very well is to give you these little bit characters that are vehicles for just some of the best lines. You know, it's almost like I'm racking my brain to think of like some cinematic examples, but there's sometimes these movies where, you know, a character exists solely to have the best lines, these show ceiling lines.
Right.
And you know, isn't necessarily integral to anything else in the story. And I'm talking about the flying monkey Bufkin in Fables. If you're familiar with Fables, you're probably smiling right now because Bufkin is a wonderfully fun little breakaway character because he's got the kind of childlike sensibilities. Yet he also is a very shrewd character who can be a little snarky at times, and he just gets some of the best little throwaway lines and gets to have some of the most fun, you know, injects a lot of little fun things into the story. And in Saga, I'm just dying for the next collection to come out because
yes.
I am in serious dire need of Lion Cat fix. And if you're unfamiliar with Saga, for the love of God, I'm going to have to even step on top of Andy's own soapbox here. Shoulders of Andrew and tell you must read this because it is brilliant in its creation of a world that makes no damn sense except in the fact that somehow it makes perfect sense. It shouldn't, and that's what's so brilliant about it, because it supposes you'll be able to work out all the stuff that doesn't make any sense at all and just go with it.
Right.
And just enjoy the ride, because the stuff that's important makes perfect sense, and the rest of it is just part of the fun, because it is such an immersive world that, you know, defies everything. But somehow, in the context of these characters that live in it and never question it for a moment, you begin to live in this universe, never question it for a moment. And the Will's companion, his partner, Lion Cat, is just a character I personally fell absolutely in love with. I just can't get enough of Lion Cat. Brilliantly written, brilliantly utilized, both from the writing and from the synergy between writer and artist in this particular series, because the visuals are equally brilliant and the art is just dynamite.
It's super good. There's one other thing I wanted to talk about, and this is a personal one, and I wanted to talk about one of the failed breakaway characters.
Uh-huh.
A character that was positioned to break away and fell just flat on its face, and it's a personal affront to me because it became my white whale for a very long time to figure out what happened, probably leading up to why I want to do shows like Hey Kids Comics and talk about these things and get to the bottom of it, because I was obsessed. There was a comic book that came out in 89. So this was a while ago, right? And that was a guy named Solar Man. Marvel put out a book called Solar Man. Solar Man had, I think, two issues of a comic book, and I had issue one. And issue one had no attachment to anything else in the Marvel universe. It was just this character, Solar Man, right? I was, what, at that point, like 11? And I liked Solar Man. And it was, you know, looking back now, it's bad. It's bad, but I liked Solar Man. I really was into it. And then it went away, and I could never figure out why. Like, it just stopped showing up. Come to find out later that Solar Man, the comic book, was created because they were trying to make a Solar Man cartoon. They had a pilot, but they wanted to generate some buzz, so they were going to create the comic book first. The comic book failed miserably, so they did not release the TV show in which the comic book was created to support. Finally came out with that. At the time it came out, I had no agency to figure this out, because it was 92. We did not have Ask Jeeves or Alta Vista really back then, and this information wouldn't have been available if we did. So now I know why it fell flat, but that was a character. If you can get a hold of Solar Man, it's crap. But it was a character that was positioned to be this breakaway character that just went nowhere because they couldn't get the pilot for the TV show greenlit until 92. So that was my anger. That was my rage.
I guess if we're going to end on rage, or at least, you know, having been affected heavily by something, another breakaway character for me in ultimately closing here is Bubastis in Watchmen, because I have to have my Watchmen connection.
Sure.
You know, almost little to no coverage. Barely, you know, an ancillary character, much less a supporting character.
Yeah.
You know, Bubastis serves seemingly no purpose other than to be like a really cool, you know, she represents Adrian Veidt's insane wealth.
Right.
Because he owns this genetically engineered lynx as a pet that even he himself rather frugally refers to as being terribly expensive to maintain, to feed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's sort of a cautionary, you know, you really don't want one of these. They look cool, but they're kind of pricey.
Yeah, right.
Even for somebody with more money than God, they're pricey. And so they, you have this ancillary character in Bubastis where she is visually striking, she is visually interesting, conceptually interesting. You have little snippets of the rapport between the two that, you know, illustrate that kind of pets as family,
mm-hmm,
without beating it like a drum. And then she ultimately, you know, ultimately Veidt has no choice but to sacrifice her.
Right.
To achieve when he is confronted with, you know, a possibility that he is prepared for, in that kind of hoping for the best and preparing for the worst. And her demise hurts more than you would imagine it should. And in that sense, she epitomizes the breakaway character.
Right. That's exactly what you summed it up perfectly. That's exactly what a breakaway character should do. All right. Well, why don't you, now that we've brought it down a little bit,
yeah,
from me being angry about Solar Man, why don't you wrap us up, give us some plugs, and we'll get out of here for this evening. And we'll come back next week with a fervor.
We have so many more discussions ahead. We literally have this show plotted out for about 3 more months, and the ideas, they just keep a coming.
That's right.
And gosh, we're getting dangerously close to more milestones as well.
I know.
We're going to hit 200 episodes, 200 issues this year. We're going to hit a 3rd anniversary or 4th anniversary. I've lost track.
I don't even know. Wow. I stopped counting at some point.
Yes, indeed. So with that, you can always find this and more at the Jedi Cole Universe at JediCole.com. Please do write to us about anything. We are hoping to amass some of your questions, and we want you to ask us questions about what, you know, what's our take on certain things, who would win a fight between who. No, don't send us those. But we want to hear you know, some of your questions, what are your burning questions you'd like us to answer? Like, what's our take on a certain storyline or a certain character or things like that? Because I really would like to, for us to produce another Hey Kids Comics Presents. It's been far too long since we kind of addressed viewer mail, as it were, writer mail. So, you know, from that standpoint, do write to us at jcumail@yahoo.com. Look for the follow us on Twitter at the Jedi Cole U. And if nothing else, come AllCon, there will be some more JCU video selfies on the Jedi Cole Universe, whatever the hell you call that, YouTube channel. And I'm hoping to start working with some people who can take stuff that I might put on video and cobble it together in an edited format to start producing some real legitimate stuff along those lines too. So that, as always, is my technical knowledge growth at intervals is in the works.
But you're getting better every day, Cole.
I am. I'm actually starting to do things like, I'm doing things Machete doesn't do.
That you are. You have texted me multiple times. I'm very impressed. So yes, join us next week when we discuss more fine comics. And as always, buy, collect, and enjoy your comics. Go back and find out the origins of your favorites. Might surprise you that they were a breakaway character.
Or that you can find no information whatsoever.
Whatsoever on your favorite character.
Except the Cheney House from space.
Cheney House from space.
Those other failed
yes.
Sweet city woman.